So now we're going to discuss some key properties of the real numbers. At the end of the last lesson, we proved the Archimedean property of the reals. Now let us treat the closely related density property of the rationals. It says that between any two real numbers is a rational number. It is also the case that between any two rational numbers is an irrational number. Since one set is countable and the other is uncountable, this is obviously a complicated situation. So theorem, the set Q of rational numbers satisfies the following density property. Let C less than D be real numbers, and there is a rational number Q in between them. Q is greater than C and less than D. And we'll use the Archimedean property to prove this. So let lambda be D minus C, which is obviously positive. By the Archimedean property, choose a positive integer n so that n times lambda is bigger than 1. Again, the Archimedean property gives a natural number capital P so that P is bigger than n times C. And another Q, so the Q is bigger than absolute value of minus n times C. So therefore, Q is greater than minus nc, and we see that nc falls between the integers minus Q and P. Therefore, there must be an integer m between minus Q and P inclusive, so that m minus 1 is less than or equal to nc is less than m. Thus, therefore, dividing by n, c is less than m over n. Also, m is less than or equal to nc plus 1. That's just moving the 1 over from the left-hand side. And therefore, dividing by n, capital M over capital N is less than or equal to c plus 1 over n, which is less than c plus lambda, which is d. So m over n is a rational number lying strictly between c and d, and that's what we wanted to know. That's the end of the proof. One of the most profound and useful properties of the real numbers, and one that is equivalent to the least upper bound property, is the intermediate value property. So theorem, let f be a continuous real valued function with domain the interval closed interval a, b. If f a equals alpha and f b equals beta, and alpha is less than beta with a number gamma strictly between, then there is a value c in the open interval a, b, so that f at c equals gamma. The figure illustrates this idea very nicely. You can see that in this picture that f at a equals alpha because the point a comma alpha is on the graph. F at b is beta because the point b comma beta is on the graph. Gamma is between alpha and beta. And there is a number c that gets mapped to gamma. So let capital S be the set of all x in the closed interval a, b so that f at x is less than gamma. Then S is not empty because A is an S and F of A is alpha, which is less than gamma. Moreover, S is bounded above by B. So C, which is the supremum of S, exists and is a finite real number, and we claim that F of C equals gamma. Clearly, F at C is less than or equal to gamma since C is the limit of numbers at which F is strictly less than gamma. So we use the continuity of F here. Suppose, seeking a contradiction that F at C is strictly less than gamma, let epsilon be gamma minus F at C. By the continuity of f, we may select a delta bigger than 0, so that if t minus c is less than delta, then f at t minus f at c is less than epsilon over 2. That's the definition of continuity. But then for t and c minus delta c plus delta, the open interval, f at t is less than f at c plus epsilon over 2, which is less than gamma. It follows that c minus delta c plus delta is a subset of s, so c cannot be the supremum of s, and that's a contradiction. Therefore, f of c equals gamma. End of proof. As an application, we prove the following special case of a famous Brouwer fixed point theorem. Let f from the closed interval 0, 1 to the closed interval 0, 1 be a continuous function, then f has a fixed point in the sense that there is a point c in the closed interval 0, 1, so that f at c equals c. Proof. Seeking a contradiction, suppose not, that in particular f at 0 is bigger than 0 and f at 1 is less than 1. Now set g of x equal x minus f of x. We see that g of 0 is 0 minus f of 0, which is minus f at 0, which must be less than 0, because f at 0 is greater than 0. And g of 1 is 1 minus f at 1, which must be greater than 0, because f at 1 is less than 1. So at one endpoint, g takes a negative value, and at the other endpoint, g takes a positive value. So by the intermediate value property, then it must therefore be a point c between 0 and 1, so that g at c is 0. But saying that g at c is 0 is saying that c minus f at c is 0, which says that c equals f at c. That's the fixed point. We'll conclude this discussion by recalling the absolute value notation. If x is a real number, then absolute value of x is equal to x if x is positive, 0 if x is 0, and minus x if x is negative. The absolute value of a real number, x, measures the distance of x to the origin. The most important property of the absolute value is the triangle inequality, absolute value x plus y less than or equal to absolute value x plus absolute value y. Okay, now we're entering the appendix phase here. This is going to be a little abstract and a little tricky. And the first time through, you probably won't completely understand it. You probably have to study it today, and then a few days later, and it'll start to sink in. Okay? So the real number system is certainly our richest number system so far and the one with the most profound properties. It's essential that we see how it's constructed. There are several techniques for constructing the real number system. From the rational number system, we use the method of Julius Dedekind. Cuts because it uses a minimum of new ideas and is fairly brief. Keep in mind that throughout this discussion, our universe is the system of rational numbers Q. We are constructing the new number system R. So we use the idea of Dedekind cuts. A cut is a subset C of Q with the following properties. Number one, C is not empty. Number two, if S is in the cut and T is less than S, then T is in the cut. Number three, if S is in the cut, then there is a number U in the cut, which is greater than S. And number four, there is a rational number X, so that C is less than X for all C in the cut. You should think of a cut C as the set of all rational numbers to the left of some point in the real line. That is an open half line of rational numbers. The picture gives you an idea of what a cut looks like. For example, the set of all x in the rational so that x squared is less than q, less than 2, union the set of all x in the rational so that x is less than 0, is a cut. Roughly speaking, is a set of rational numbers to the left of square root of 2. But take care to note that square root of 2 does not exist as a rational number. So we're using a circuitous method to specify this set. Since we have not constructed the real line yet, we cannot define this cut in that simple way. We have to make the construction more indirect. But if you consider the four properties of a cut, they describe a set that looks like a rational left half line. Notice that if C is a cut and S is not in C, then any rational number T greater than S is also not in C. Also, if R is in the cut and S is not in the cut, then it must be that R is less than S. Definition. If C and D are cuts, then we say that C is less than D, provided that C is a subset of D, but C is not equal to D. Check for yourself that less than here is a strict simple ordering on the set of all cuts. We note that C equals D if and only if C is contained in D and D is contained in C. Now we introduce operations of addition and multiplication that will turn the set of all cuts into a field. If C and D are cuts, then we define C plus D, capital C plus capital D, to equal the set of all little c plus little d, so that little c is in capital C and little d is in capital D. We define the cut O hat to be the set of all negative rationals. The cut O hat will play the role of the additive identity. We are now required to check that the field axioms A1 through A5 hold. For A1, we need to see that C plus D is a cut. Obviously, C plus D is not empty. If S is an element of C plus D and T is a rational number less than S, right? S minus C equals C plus D, where C is in C and D is in D. Then T minus C is less than S minus C, which equals D. So D minus C is in the cut D, and C is in the cut C. Hence T equals C plus T minus C is in C plus D. A similar argument shows that there is an R bigger than S, so that R is in C plus D. Finally, if X is a rational upper bound for C, and Y is the rational upper bound for D, then X plus Y is a rational upper bound for C plus D. So we conclude that C plus D is a cut. And we've now defined addition in a well-defined way for cuts. Since addition of rational numbers is commutative, it follows immediately that addition of cuts is commutative. Associativity follows similarly. That takes care of A2 and A3. Now we show that if C is a cut, then C plus 0 equals C. For if C is in C and Z is in 0, then C plus Z is less than C plus 0 equals C. Hence, C plus 0 is a subset of C. Also, if C star is in C, then choose a D star in C so that C star is less than D star, then C star minus D star is less than 0, so C star minus D star is in the 0 cut, and C star equals D star plus C star minus D star, hence C is a subset of C plus 0. We conclude that C plus 0 equals C. This is axiom A4. Finally, for axiom A5, let C be a cut and set minus C to be equal to the set of all D and Q, so that there exists a D star greater than D, so that C plus D star is less than 0 for all C in the cut. If X is a rational upper bound for C, then minus X is in minus C, so minus C is not empty. It is routine to check that minus C is a cut. By its very definition, C plus minus C is a subset of the cut 0. Further, if Z isn't 0, then there is a Z star in 0, so that Z is less than Z star, choose an element C in the cut C, so that C plus C star minus C is not in C. Let C star and C be such that C is less than C star, set C double star equals Z minus C star, then D star equals Z minus C is greater than C double star. We claim that C twiddle plus D star is less than 0 for all C twiddle in the cut C. Suppose for the moment that this claim has been proved, then this shows that C double star is in minus C, and then Z equals D star plus C double star is in C plus minus C, so that 0 is a subset of C plus minus C. We conclude, since C plus minus C is a subset of 0, and 0 is a subset of C plus minus C, we conclude that C plus minus C equals 0, and axiom A5 is therefore established. It remains to prove the claim. So let D star be defined as above and select C twiddle and C, then D star plus C twiddle equals Z plus minus C plus C twiddle, which is less than Z plus Z star minus C, which is Z star less than 0. And here we have used the choice of C, of course. This establishes the claim and completes the proof of A5. Having verified the axioms for addition, we now turn to multiplication. Definition: if C and D are cuts, then we define the product C times D as, if C and D are both positives, then C times D is equal to the set of all Q in the rational, so that Q is less than C, little c times little d for some little c and capital C, the cut, and some little d and capital D, the cut, with C bigger than 0 and D bigger than 0. If C is bigger than 0, the cut C is bigger than 0, and the cut D is less than 0, we define C times D to be minus C times minus D. So we've reduced the product of a positive and a negative cut to the product of a positive, two positive cuts with a minus sign in front. If C is less than 0 and D greater than 0, then same idea. If C and D are both less than 0, then we define C times D to be minus C times minus D. If either C is 0 or D is 0, then C times D is 0. Notice that for convenience, we have defined multiplication of negative numbers just as we did in high school. The reason is that the definition that we use for the product of two positive numbers cannot work when one of the two factors is negative. We have said what the additive identity is in this realization of the real numbers. Of course, the multiplicative identity is the cut corresponding to 1. In other words, it's a set of all rationals to the left of 1. We leave it to the reader to verify that if C is any cut, then 1 times C equals C times 1 equals C. Next time, we should complete the construction of the real number system using Dedekind cuts. Thanks for listening.